It's pornified Poirot.
Yes. Hey, Maniacs.
Hey, Mystery Maniacs.
Yes.
Mystery Maniacs is a comedy recap podcast dedicated to mystery TV. Each week, we dig into an episode of a show, including the murders, the mayhem, the loonies, and everything else we love. This week, Poirot, The Incredible Theft. And I'm going to get it out of the way right now. Is it really an incredible theft?
No.
No.
And there's no murder.
Season 1, Episode 8, I'm Mark.
I'm Sarah.
If you, first of all, a spoiler podcast, so we're going to let you know that there's no murders in this episode.
Yeah.
It's not really a crime, and they kind of get away with it.
But it's still a really good episode.
But it's a great episode.
But we are going to ruin it for you. So if you haven't seen The Incredible Theft, stop. Go watch it. Come back.
From February 26th, 1989, the Berlin Wall was still up.
Before we dive in, a few announcements, including next Sunday,
April 28th,
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time,
Tea
with the Maniacs.
With the Maniacs. We'll it's be our, sipping tea and dishing tea.
It's our celebration of having 200 episodes under our belt. We hope you'll keep sending good questions. We have lots.
We have lots of questions.
But always room
but
for more.
Keep sending them in.
Yep. That'll be live on YouTube. You'll be able to watch it.
At 4 o'clock.
Participate in the chat. And it'll be recorded. So if you can't make it, you can watch it later.
So what else happened this week? You saw a goblin.
I did. I'm still, we're joking, but I'm still kind of weirded out by it.
Was it a cold troll too?
Middle of the day, four-way stop in the middle of a neighborhood. Car pulls up to go straight. I'm going to turn. So we look at each other to see who's going to go first. It's a little black hatchback, tiny car. This person who's driving it, their nose barely hit the bottom of the window on the door. So a very small person wearing a black hood of some sort, like a hoodie.
Yep.
Looks over at me and has a green face. The strangest green face I have ever seen.
Now.
And then just goes straight. And I'm like, wait, goblin, wait.
We live in a college town, so things can get weird.
If it was Halloween, yeah, if it was late at night.
Something.
If it was a weekend, it was a Tuesday at lunchtime. I saw a goblin driving a Honda Yaris.
Excellent.
I don't know. I can't explain it. Maybe I'm losing my mind. Oh, also this week, one of our kids, the middle child, got accepted to grad school for a master's in psych. I'm really excited
That's
for her.
That's super cool.
She's going to be going to the place where I got my master's. Both of my parents graduated from and her dad graduated from.
There you go.
It's amazing.
Yes.
But excellent. There's so much to figure out. This kid can't even drive.
Yeah, well... We have a summer of, it's time to grow up.
Yes. Congratulations. You graduated from college. Time to be a grown up.
Yep. Another thing is the episode of The Black Tree Prophecy came out.
The Midsummer finally out in the UK.
And then they're not showing any more.
I don't know what their problem is.
Do not know what they're doing. But now we have a whole bunch of new people who are now indoctrinated in the way of the plague baby.
Yes. The plague baby who spends its time just hanging out in a car and then grows up to be a killer.
Yep.
Who would win in a battle? Plague baby or coal troll? I think coal troll's winning because I don't think plague baby's plague is going to infect the troll.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Troll is immune to plague baby's plague.
I posted another one of those videos that was like, this is what Sarah and Mark are watching because we're cool folks.
Not because we're cool.
I know. That was sarcastic.
Oh, okay. Because if we share what we're watching, other people reply, like you, with what you're watching. And
now,
everybody...
wait a minute. That might build community.
Hey.
What are we doing here?
We finished this week The Man Who Died.
Yes.
On Acorn.
So it's a 2022 miniseries from Finland with a young man named Jossi Vatanen in the lead.
I wasn't sure about it in the first episode. And then by the end of it, though, I was hooked. It was, and I don't usually like to watch foreign language shows that don't have dubbing. I don't like to have to read the subtitles to watch something because I'm always doing something while I'm watching TV. Right now it's English paper piecing quilting.
Yes.
And so I can't look at that and look at what's in my hands at the same time. But this was engaging enough. I didn't care.
And it is a detective show, a comedy, a fish out of water, a small town, a gangster show, a love story.
Yep.
And kind of a foodie thing with samurai swords.
Yes. In Finland, all at once. It's really fun. The premise is crazy.
And it's only four episodes. There's no fat on cruises. That show.
The man who is solving the murder is the one who has been murdered.
And
he's not a ghost.
Every single thing is wrapped up completely really well.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
And
4.5 stars out of 5.
And a life lesson.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
Beware of mushrooms.
Well, I've been saying that for years, but
you don't like mushrooms.
No.
I made stroganoff this weekend. You wouldn't even eat it.
I don't like mushrooms.
That's the first time I've made something that you just refuse to eat.
Sorry.
You usually just kind of suck it up and
the beef, but sorry.
You're lost.
Don't like mushrooms.
You ready to talk about The Incredible Theft?
So directed by Edward Bennett and written by David Reed and Clive Exton. And sometimes you see a show and you're like, oh, there's two writers. How does that work? Well, I think it's pretty clear that one guy wrote one scene and another guy wrote some other scene.
One of them is funny.
Yes.
And the other one is not.
David Reed is more of a producer than he is a writer. He's done a lot more production work than he has writing work. So I think he was probably like, you need to tell a story that's connected here. And Clive Exton, who's written a billion things, probably was like, but these are clever little vignettes with Poirot in them.
It has some of the best dialogue from any Poirot episode in it.
Yes.
So many moments where I just like paused to laugh because I didn't want to miss anything. And I've seen it at least 5 times before.
And you spend this episode going, oh, this is the episode that has that in it.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that now. I didn't remember it was in this episode.
And we made fun that Mrs. Vanderlei, who is an American played by a British lady, is over the top and annoying. I didn't find her as over the top and annoying because I realized she's not in it all that much.
No, she's actually kind of subtle.
You actually kind of feel sorry for her until she's with the Nazis.
Yes. She is a Nazi. It's Vanderlyn, not Vanderlei. Vanderlyn.
Yes.
Her lips are thinner than I remember. She's kind of puckery.
That dress. Well, we'll talk about that dress.
Yeah, we will. Because it is key to the crime.
Yes.
In a way that you don't know about yet.
Oh, I don't know.
This is set in the 30s. So, of course, we're between the wars. So the development of new weapons, knowing that there's probably going to be another war coming, is really important. So, of course, this centers around the plans for a new battle plane.
But more importantly, in the cold opening, we have, okay, music department, we need Poirot theme, but different.
Yes. Make it sound more airplane-y.
Play it on a detuned piano.
Yeah. We meet Mayfield,
yes,
who is the man who is developing the plane, and Sir George Carrington, who represents the government,
yes,
there to decide whether they're going to invest in
the
new plane.
We also meet another individual. But boy, did you notice there's the guy who comes up and puts the gas in the plane? He is overjoyed that he is doing this.
Yes. He's like, yay, I get to put gas in the plane.
They are all obviously reenactors.
Mm-hmm.
Of like aerial reenactors, which is a thing that there is.
Yeah.
And they're so happy to be doing this.
It's a beautiful plane.
It is a beautiful plane. It is actually, they talk about it, but this plane is actually a Spitfire.
Yes.
It's a IXB MH-434 and was flown by Ray Hanna.
Go Ray.
Go Ray. He's doing spills.
Loopity loops.
Loopity loops and all sorts of
flippity flips.
Yeah.
It's kind of a joke that they call it the Kestrel because the Spitfire was originally called the Shrike, which is another kind of bird.
Yeah.
And the guy who invented the Spitfire thought the Spitfire was a dumb name. He wanted it to be called the Shrike.
Yes.
Kestrel's a kind of hawk, often used for hunting.
But more importantly, Poirot is shining his shoes. So we get this intercut in the cold opening between the plane stuff, which we know is important.
Yeah.
And
Poirot's office.
Poirot's office.
It's one of those situations where he's treating Hastings like he's a child, like he's like a young teenager. Like, I'm trying to teach you how to take care of your shoes. This is going to be important later. Like, this man has fought in wars. If he can't take care of his shoes by now, he doesn't want to.
Yes.
But then he reveals that he's basically dating somebody's mother.
Yes.
And he's too stupid to know it. So maybe he does need life lessons.
Can I suggest a life lesson for Hastings?
What?
You should not put your shoes on Poirot's furniture.
Apparently Poirot doesn't care. I think he would. Oh, I think that God would bother him a lot.
And I love how, so the idea is that Hastings is dating this woman. He goes to her house constantly, which most Americans would be like, what do you mean he goes to her house?
Yeah, she's never there.
She's never there. So he has tea with her mother. And the implication is that he's basically dating his mother.
He doesn't want to be, but because she's avoiding him.
But Poirot is like, oh, you don't know anything about the women.
Well, and she's an architecture student.
Yes.
And so Hastings is trying to figure out some way to connect with her. And he says, how do you calculate the cubic whatchamacallits, the cubic thingies? You think that's going to impress her?
He would have gone to school. He would have understood that. And especially if you read an entire book on Bernini, I think you would get that.
Bernini, the 17th century sculptor and architect from Rome.
Yes.
Who did a lot of sculptures.
Created and that whole buildings neo that you've classical
seen.
Renaissance.
Yeah, that everybody has seen. There's a pencil sketch, a framed pencil sketch on Poirot's wall.
Yes.
That's behind him while he's talking to Hastings, polishing his shoes. And I can't figure out what it is. It's people.
It's people.
But I don't know what they're doing.
It looks like a woman with no shirt on from the back and pants.
But then it can't be. And what is she doing?
Like a woman in a kimono. It's very hard.
We're going to post a picture. Yeah, we'll if anybody recognizes picture. It or knows what it is, please tell us, because I looked and looked and looked at it and I could not figure it out. Poirot is putting petroleum jelly on his patents, which is fine.
Which absolutely fine. It's not the best thing. There's lots of better things now, but would have totally
been fine.
Keeps
them from cracking, yes. Right? Which is the death of patent leather. But his spats are still attached to his shoes, and I don't understand why.
I also don't think Poirot would do this standing up. He would be at a table, sitting, doing this.
I don't know. So I looked into spats and shoes. I'm assuming people are familiar with what spats are. They're those... It's a fabric bit that goes like around your ankle and down over the top of your shoes and has buttons up one side. It protects your shoes and your ankles. They're fancy, and yet they're also utilitarian because soldiers at the time wore spats over their boots too.
They're a weird sock pant hybrid.
Yes, they are. They fill the gap between the hem of your pants and the top of your shoes, I guess.
And it's World War I. Soldiers especially wore spats because trench warfare and...
Kept your feet dry.
Kept your feet dry and all that good stuff.
And it also was a way of cinching in the bottom of your pants.
Yes.
Right? It closes the bottom. If you wear them over your trousers and your boots, it cinches them in.
He should not be doing what he's doing with the spats on.
So I looked into them, and do you know what saddle Oxfords are?
So saddle Oxfords, Oxford is a type of patent leather men's shoes that...
But saddle Oxfords are a very specific kind.
So saddle Oxfords then, I think, no, I don't know what exactly.
Okay.
I thought I did.
All you had to do was
I know what brogues are. I know what Oxfords are.
You know
are,
other shoes.
But I don't know what saddle
Oxfords. Oxfords, you've seen them. They're the ones that have a black toe and a black heel. But the center part where the laces are is white.
Okay.
So they're black and white.
Okay.
They originate from spats. They're made to kind of imitate the look of spats over black shoes.
That makes sense.
So why do 50s girls, poodle skirt wearers, love saddle Oxfords?
I don't know, but those...
I don't get the connection there.
Yeah.
Like 20 years later, the spat look is hot with teeny boppers. Who do you think orders more spats right now? What kind of consumer do you think is the greatest consumer of spats?
This may be the most esoteric
at the moment
that we've ever.
It's amazing. It's when I tell you, you're going to be like, of course.
The Indian Army.
No, you want one more guess?
Yeah.
I'll narrow it down. In the U.S., who do you think buys the most spats?
Someone on Broadway.
No, way more than that. Thousands of people order spats every year in the U.S. Marching bands.
Oh, yes.
They are the biggest consumer of spats.
For those of the people in the rest of the world, marching bands is this thing that Americans
bands.
Do. No. Not like it is here. So every high school in even the smallest town have fully costumed marching bands.
Yes. And it's kind of paramilitary type of like dress uniform costume kind of.
Yes. It's
and most colleges do too.
It's sports for geeks in high school.
Yeah. Because they play during football games and stuff. But they also compete.
But they march and it's so weird.
And they wear spats.
The whole high school and college sports and the world surrounding it in the U.S. is something I haven't got used to, and I've been here 25 years.
But now you know.
Yeah.
That makes
sense.
That's a good piece of pub quiz trivia. Who orders the most spats in the United States?
Oh, but Poirot is not done yet. His wit.
Miss Lemon is getting anonymous phone calls. I just want Miss Lemon to pick up the phone here.
That's not an anonymous phone call.
Sure it is. I mean, it's a different kind.
You mean 666666?
Across her forehead? Yeah. Her spit curls?
She's got the spit curls going.
She's double evil. somebody's calling and won't give a name. And she's not off put by somebody's in distress and won't give me their name. It's, I can't possibly forward this call to you because where will I file it?
Life first, filing second will be the name of a chapter in my productivity book when I write it.
She's obsessive with her filing system. She says, well, on your own head be it. I'll forward the call to you next time she calls.
And thankfully, Hastings is like, Poirot!
Stop teasing her.
She makes it irresistible.
Now she's saying she's Miss Smith, but I'm sure it's her. Poor Miss Lemon.
Wow, giant explosion.
Well, it's 2 square feet of molten lead.
It's an impressive explosion, though.
It is.
They do a good job.
And I'm glad they're far enough away from it. Initially, it feels like, are they in danger?
Yep. By the way, I invited a Nazi over for dinner.
I'll show you how trustworthy I am. I invited a Nazi to my house. And I'm going to have the secret valuable plans just laying about. See? I'm trustworthy. What? It's kind of backwards.
Meet me at the zoo. Where are we going to meet at the zoo? At the most Art Deco zoo ever.
At the Poirot pen.
Yes.
The penguin pen.
The penguin pool is.
But they all look like little Poirots. They're so cute.
The Art Deco in this episode, the doors that Mrs. Lemon opens, mm-hmm. the cards they play with are all beautiful.
But the penguin pool tops it.
Those letters.
It's gorgeous.
Just gorgeous.
And the penguins are so cute.
Yes. You're supposed to wear a green carnation.
Well, she's too busy wearing
times.
She's too busy wearing a fungus hat.
What is that fungus hat?
It's like a brown
hat. I do not want that hat in my stroganoff.
Tip to the side with a thing growing on it.
Yeah, it's weird.
If it was any other color, I would think that's kind of cool.
But
it's brown, so it looks like a growth.
So they talk in like this aviary area,
mm-hmm.
which is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Again, the Kookaburra board is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm in every show. But like they're talking and I'm like, I don't care. I'm looking around at everything because it's so beautiful there.
Look out, there's a fungus on your head. it's like grabbing her head.
I don't do domestics.
It's like groping the side of her head.
So she was involved with this dude and tanks and all sorts of things, and my husband and the Japanese business. Help me, help me, help me.
And he's like,
all of a sudden, teleported Poirot and Hastings. They're just there.
Like, you want me to come to a country house for the weekend to solve a crime? I'm on it.
Yes. Steeple Bumstead, they talk about it.
Slurdy Bart Fats.
Yeah, we Steeple Bumstead. I did some research. Wow.
It's a fun thing to say.
It is.
It's like, what's the name of that the singer that, the comedian makes fun of his name?
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yes, it's like Engelbert Humperdinck.
Well, I'm going to challenge you.
Steeple Bumstead.
Because we may not find a better place for us to emigrate and live to in England.
Oh, you want to go live in Steeple Bumstead?
It is the perfect British village.
But I'll giggle all the time.
It has. Tell me what the name of the pub is.
The Three Crowns.
No, the Fox and Hounds.
Of course it is.
It is the quintessential village.
I wonder if anybody who's listening has ever been to Steeple Bumstead.
The only problem I found with this village was the fact that it was a 10-minute drive to the nearest train station.
10 minutes?
I know.
Oh my gosh.
In 2 hours, you're in downtown London. From there.
Nice.
Like, yeah.
And you get to say, I live in Steeple Bumstead.
I live in Steeple Bumstead.
Upper Steeple Bumstead.
So then I looked.
Lower Steeple Bumstead.
No, it's just Steeple Bumstead.
Middle Steeple Bumstead.
I looked then at houses in Steeple Bumstead.
I'm assuming it's quite expensive.
We cannot afford to live in Steeple Bumstead.
We'll go stay in a ditch in Steeple Bumstead.
The cheapest cottage, which was a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
The cheapest.
That's semi-detached.
Yes, semi-detached. $650,000. It was gorgeous on the inside.
Yeah, but you got to share a wall with somebody.
To live there.
Maybe we should park our canal boat there.
It had an amazing backyard that ran up to the canal. I'll get to the canal.
I bet you there's archaeology in that backyard.
I'm sure there is. I looked at that house for a good 20 minutes, imagining living there with
We're
you.
We're such UK fetishists. I bet you the council tax is really high, and the neighbors are mean, and there's a murder there every week. Why don't we live there now?
But it's so British. Very British. The manor house got blown up. They destroyed it in like the 40s.
It didn't get blown up. It got demolished.
It got demolished.
That's so different.
Yes. So it's not the manor house in this episode, of course.
If our house blew up versus got demolished, I'd have very different feelings about
that's
it.
That's true. So anyway,
I mean, neither would be positive, but
Mrs. Vanderlei appears.
Vanderlyn.
Mrs. Vanderlyn appears
at the drinks reception.
Yes.
In that dress.
Yes. So first of all, it's backless.
You can almost see her butt crack. Speaking about steeple back bumble butt. Like, she's got the steeple back bumble butt going on in that dress.
It is like that dress is perfect for that character.
Yeah, it is. It's super flashy. We can only assume that she's arrived, gone to her room, and changed.
Yes.
Because when Lady Carrington arrives, she says, is it okay if I don't change?
Yeah, she's right to the booze.
Because she doesn't want to dress for dinner.
Booze and the cards. That's Lady Carrington.
I think it's also an American thing, too, that we overdress for things. So she's overly flashy.
Yes.
Instead of being sophisticated.
Yes.
All I know is that her dress looks like it's made out of aluminum foil.
Yes, it does.
And you can see her steeple back bumble butt in it.
In a poor woman who's had to wear some bad clothes, especially in The Man with the Golden Gun, this is probably the most luxurious thing she's ever wore.
I'm not sure how to say this actress's name. It's Carmen Dusautoy.
Yeah.
Sautoy. She was also in Ring Out Your Dead, which is season 5 of Midsommar.
Yeah, she's English.
Very English.
She's very English.
She's very Nazi is what she is.
She is indeed. Very Nazi.
You're so Nazi. So very Nazi.
So after dinner where they discuss Ungo Bongo.
Not that 80s band.
They play cards.
Mm-hmm.
And
bridge.
The two things I find interesting here, first of all, are that they do a good job of making her charming to Poirot.
She's a name dropper, though.
Oh, she is.
At dinner.
Yeah.
Well, when I was with the prime minister yesterday.
Yes. Mr. Ed Eden, the foreign secretary.
There's a little bit of anachronism going on there. They yeah. talk like Churchill is the prime minister, I yeah. think, and Eden. Yeah.
It's a little weird.
But she's like, I'm very important. I'm very connected. Just want everybody to know.
And then those cards that they play bridge with are beautiful.
I didn't really pay attention to them. They're just pretty.
Absolutely. They're black and gold with this Art Deco design on the back.
Nice.
Just gorgeous. Mrs. Carrington's not the best card player and also blames Poirot, who is the best card player.
He's a very good card player. When in the other episode where they're playing cards and he's paired with Ariadne, it's clear that he is good at, well, he doesn't do anything he's not good at.
Yes.
I'll go lay out the secret plans on your desk, sir.
With a fan right beside them.
I've seen this episode 5-6 times, I don't know. And every time I think, it hasn't been stolen. It was blown off the desk. It's hiding under the cabinet. Somebody find it.
Meanwhile,
every single time. I think this is all red herring. It just blew off the desk.
The sound guy's like, what do you mean a fan?
Why do we have to have that fan running? There's nobody sitting at the desk who needs the fan. Why is it running?
No.
There's paper there. Why do we want a fan blowing on it?
So Poirot says he needs to get some air and exercise his legs and whatever he says he is. But
spy.
He's off to meet with Hastings.
Poor Hastings.
Hastings is the hero of this episode.
He absolutely is. He's just sitting out in the garden in the dark waiting for Poirot
just
to come out.
Waiting for
Poirot. He's been talking to the chauffeur, I guess.
Yes.
But I just feel, he's like, well, why can't I stay in the house? And Poirot says, you weren't invited. And he goes, well, surely that was an oversight.
Which it would have been. Everybody would have known Captain Hastings.
No, I need you at the inn in town. But there was only one room and I have to share a bed with Jap.
They are an hour from London. Why are they staying over?
They've got to be nearby in case something happens, and Hastings has got to do reconnaissance. But I'm just imagining Hastings and Jap in the same bed. First of all, they're super tall, so their feet are both hanging off the end. And Jap definitely wears a nightcap.
Oh, yeah.
One of those long ones like Scrooge with a little pom-pom at the end.
The Jap Hastings in bed show is the best show. I think. So
it makes this me is think not of...
This is
remember the scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles
yes.
when John Candy and Steve Martin yes. are laying in bed together? That's Jap and Hastings
That's
in the morning.
Jap and Hastings in the morning.
Those aren't pillows.
I think. It's a blamage.
So Poirot's outside, and so are Sir George and Mayfield. And Vanderlyn just shows up in the study.
Yep.
Oh, I'm just getting my purse.
Yeah.
She's still got her gown on. I'm just getting my purse. And they're like, yeah, that's likely. Go ahead, whatever.
In like the worst American accent ever, it sounds a little Southern.
I don't know what she's trying to pull.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But that is the least stealthy get-up outfit ever. Like
yeah.
if you're sneaking around, not in that metallic dress.
And she's supposed to be this incredibly intelligent, ruthless spy. She would be smarter than that.
Well, she's not stealing the plans anyway. What she's doing is making herself a suspect.
Yes.
So they can suspect her?
I guess.
Is that the word I'm looking for?
I don't know what you're looking for.
She's making herself appear to be a suspect.
Yes.
So they can investigate her, but she didn't do it.
Yeah, she knows.
She's not stealing it.
Yeah.
So she's a red herring
it's
for her own herringness.
An incredible theft. Is
well,
it?
You know why she wants it.
Why?
The top sheet that's missing are the secret mathematics for the aluminum sheeting.
Yes.
She's going to make a new dress.
Oh!
Because that dress is made out of aluminum
foil. Holy sheeting. That dress is made out of aluminum?
She's not using it for another plane. She's like, I can make a better steamboat bumblebutt dress. More reflective. Better.
In this case, Poirot tells the truth constantly and no one believes him.
Everybody has, well, Yes and no. Okay, he's not right.
Well, he kind of is right.
He's saying Vanderlyn didn't steal them. She didn't take them off the desk.
She didn't at that point in time.
No.
And he does go, I said that everybody who had access to them, and you completely blew that away.
Yeah.
And the government guy's like, imagine if you were a woman.
Sir George. And Poirot says, of course, if that will help you. Which immediately makes me think of Poirot in drag.
Yes.
Because you know he's not getting rid of the mustache.
No.
So he's going to be in drag with the mustache.
Froggy in drag.
David Suchet did actually play drag in The Importance of Being Earnest on stage in London. Oh. I got a picture of it.
Oh.
He's not convincing even without the mustache.
No, I don't think he would.
It's like, look, it's Poirot in drag. Because that's who he is now. There's a female officer because Jap comes in with the troops.
Yeah,
dun, so Jap
arrives, takes over the old situation.
Not subtle at all. No, you, no. That way, you, that way. Like, you don't even know exactly what's happened yet.
This
and
is
you're
my
like,
pigeon now.
Yeah.
What?
What? Meanwhile, get Vanderlyn, haul her to the police station,
yes.
I guess, and strip her, Helga. Oh,
but... So she is upstairs and they go up and they arrest her. Mm-hmm. She's in her underwear.
She's in her nightgown.
Yes. She gets dressed and comes down the stairs, dragging her finger along the banister. And we're back to the music department.
Uh-huh.
Because we want the Poirot theme, but we want it sexied up. It's pornified Poirot.
Yes. Sultry sex.
So they don't know
do
where
do you think she got cavity searched or just strip searched?
I don't want to.
How far did Helga go?
That's not Poirot talk.
Vanderlyn looks pretty upset when she leaves that room.
She is pissed.
I mean, who wouldn't be? You
yes.
know, the indignity of it all. Since she hasn't actually stolen the plans.
So then
she's still guilty.
But. Then the the government guy says, Froggy thinks she didn't do it.
Froggy knows she didn't do it, Ribbit. Poor Poirot puts up with so much. Well, when he is at the drinks reception and Lady Carrington says, oh, a foreigner? Well, you'll soon figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, he's not new.
Yeah.
Just because he has an accent. People always make these assumptions about him because of his accent.
Where could I get more information about the people in this episode? Hastings
yeah.
explains the entire Japanese thing just because he remembers it.
Because he's connected.
Yeah.
He knows about military stuff because yeah. he's Captain Hastings. Yes. Eating his breakfast at 9:30 in the morning, according to the clock on the wall.
Yes.
In the inn.
But now, is this where the blancmange comes up?
Yes.
So he's complaining to Poirot about how Jap sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that he talks in his sleep. This is Jap who talks in his sleep.
Keep in mind, there were no big beds at this point.
No. They're in a queen bed at best.
Probably a double.
Yes.
Those two elbowy, knee, long-legged, big-nosed, tall men laying in a bed next to each other. And Jap thrashes and yells all night. Now I've got you, young fellow. Jap of the Yard strikes again. Which I just love. Stand back, lads. He's got a blancmange.
Stand back, lads. He's got a blancmange.
If you don't know what a blancmange is, imagine a Jell-O mold that's made with creamy Jell-O.
Yeah.
It is.
That's what a blancmange is.
I mean, it's gelatinous, creamy stuff.
Yeah.
Like if you put milk in Jell-O and let it set. Some of the things he was saying were enough to make a cat laugh. What the hell does that mean?
What's my pigeon now?
Enough to make a cat laugh.
Then we have an incredibly suspicious scene where packages and cases and envelopes and everything
yeah.
are passed back and forth.
Right in front of Poirot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Abort plan, change it, do yeah. something. Because Carlyle, who is Mayfield's manservant, his confidential secretary,
yes.
Is the worst spy ever. You left this red case, this Nazi red case... Oh, thank you, Carlisle. Yeah. Here's a letter. Make sure it gets mailed. She'll just forget.
Secret, blackmail, secret.
Yeah. I mean, it's so obvious what's going on.
So then there's a car chase.
Epic car chase.
There are so many interesting things about this car chase.
Because, of course, Hastings has been working on his car because his car needs to be rehauled every 30 seconds.
Yes.
So he's taken the spark plugs out of his car with one of the policemen helping him. And that is the moment when they need to chase her.
And they steal a car. They steal the police car.
Yes.
The policeman.
Hey, you stop.
Hey, or I'll say hey again.
They took my car. And Hastings comes into his own.
Does Hastings drift around the corners?
Yeah.
He does.
And goes through a smokescreen and a giant pedal.
It's Froggy and the Furious.
And knows the back roads.
Yep.
Yeah. Hold on. How many times does he say hold on?
Get the map out.
Poirot puts on his pince-nez.
We're right near Throcking.
You can't look at a map in a jostly car with your pince-nez on.
They go through a town, and I'm like, wait a minute. What is that couple doing?
Oh, the one sitting on the grass?
Yeah, they're sitting on the grass talking very far away from each other.
Yeah.
They're not intimate at all, and they're clearly talking to each other, but they've just thrown their bikes on the ground.
They don't have kickstands.
Oh, lean it against a tree.
There aren't any trees immediately around them. They have to be out in the open so they can be on the uppity up.
Somebody's going to fall.
Vanderline's car, she's like, John, go faster. I don't know why I made her sound like Sean Connery. Because she's so teethy. It's, you know, her teeth are so tight. Yes. So very English.
So very.
Because that's how Americans sound.
Yes.
And there's a hay truck, right?
Yes.
There's a farm truck full of hay.
Yeah.
And just some random dude in the back of it playing with hay.
Your long day.
What is he doing?
Your long day, you putting the hay in the back of
the truck? No. This guy's not a farmer. He's wearing a Fair Isle vest and a tie and wool pants. He's not a farmer.
He's a farmer.
Nor is he a hitchhiker that they've picked up on the side of the road. He looks like he'd be a friend of Hastings.
He's a guy who tripped over a bike.
He looks like he should be important.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like he should be a character.
But
like they're going to need him later, and they don't. I don't know why he's there.
This is so much what we've talked about season one so many times already. There's so much money in this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
so many extras, so many unnecessary people,
yeah.
So many locations.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's... I just looked at him and I was like, who are you?
Yes.
Who are you? And then, why are you there?
And then Hastings drops a gold nugget in Poirot's lap. And goes, well, that's near the German ambassador's house.
Because Poirot is just naming random, I guess there's a village every quarter mile.
Oh, yeah, it is kind of like that.
And he's like, Upper Bumbledink, Tinkle Tonk, Suet Pudding. Filksburg? No, none of those. Oh, I once had a friend on the front that lived near Tinkle Tonk, right next to the German ambassador's house.
Oh!
Wonk, 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 wonk. The alarm goes off.
So she pulls up to the German ambassador's house. By the way, the German ambassador never lived in a house in the country.
Especially with a big sign that says, residence of the German ambassador on a brass plaque.
The German ambassador now lives at 2123 Belgrave Square in London.
Okay, this is not the German ambassador's house. This is the Nazi ambassador's house, okay? Because his guards walk up. With a German shepherd.
They got the German shepherd.
Wearing jodhpurs.
They got the jodhpurs. They do the salute.
They do the salute.
They're super Nazis.
Here is the red suitcase that no one will ever mistake for anything else. Let's do the Heil at each other. She's wearing all white. White gloves, everything. Like, could she be screaming louder with any movement that she makes?
Yeah.
If she was wearing a fully aluminum outfit, she wouldn't be more standout-ish. Jodhpur Dieter comes up with his dog. Thank you, comrade, or whatever.
Now is the time where we do salutes.
Yes, and then we will close the gate and you will leave.
The Nazis now have the plan.
No. Well, Carlisle gave him bad math. Carlisle, the worst spy,
and
an even worse mathematician.
Well, and
on
then,
purpose.
Okay, so she kind of gets away with it, but we find out that the plans have changed, and they've given them false plans, okay? which is clever.
Okay. Yes, but doesn't make Mayfield any better. Because Mayfield, the whole reason,
is still horrible.
The whole reason he did it was that she was blackmailing him over his actual sale of arms to the Japanese.
Yes.
He is actually guilty of what he had been accused of.
Oh, honey, I love you now that you're not. Oh, wait a minute. You are. Never mind. I still love you.
You're still a war criminal.
Yeah.
A war profiteer, at least.
But he's better now because if you notice in this scene especially, he is the anti-Hitler mustache.
So the gap.
He has no middle part. It just has the sides.
Is that how you express that you're against Nazis? You shave the middle of your mustache?
It's the anti-Hitler.
Do you know why Hitler had that mustache?
Because of the gas mask in World War I.
Yeah. Your big bushy mustache would not have been good for a gas mask.
Okay, there are a number of reasons why I would have died long before that in World War I. Why is he running? Oh, he's dead.
No, Mr. Mayfield, between the husband and the wife, there should be no sleepy dogs.
No sleepy dogs. You got sold a pup. A pup?
What's a pup?
What's a pup? A little dog.
Wah, wah, wah. That's almost an airplane joke.
It's an airplane joke.
Shirley, don't call me Shirley.
And we've all learned a lesson, which is you shouldn't meet anonymous women at
the just
zoo.
Shows the dangers of meeting anonymous women at the zoo.
Yes.
Hastings with his infinite wisdom.
And then Poirot is on point again at the end.
Well, because Hastings is joking with him like, oh, well, you must hate it when everything turns out well at the end. And
well, no, that's Jap that's saying.
Jap says it, yeah. You must hate it when, you know, the case is all resolved and everything. Yeah, but the bad guys get away.
Yeah.
I mean, Mayfield's not going to pay a price.
No.
And Vanderlyn, maybe if she tries to ingratiate herself more with the Nazi party, is going to get found out as having given them bad plans and they might seek revenge on her.
Maybe.
But she's just going to go back to America in her aluminum dress and get away with it. Nothing's going to happen to her.
Dieter and Franz aren't coming after her.
No. But anyway, Poirot says, yes, it is hard, but we must put on a brave face and not let the cheerfulness to keep breaking through. In the back of the car. He's so smiley.
This may be one of the funniest Poirot episodes.
It is very funny.
And it has Nazis.
I think it can be funny because there's no murder.
Yes.
So it can be more slapsticky. If there was a dead body involved, this stuff doesn't go over very well.
That blancmange line. Wow. How did that ever make
it
through?
How did they not crack up saying that? How many takes did that breakfast scene take?
And like, was that improvised? Like, did he have like 20 things that Jap said and he just went through
what
the
list? What else would Jap say in his sleep?
Because they do that sometimes, right?
My God, Emily, you're so boring.
No, not more Welsh singing.
Yes. I want to wax my mustache just like Poirot.
I secretly love Poirot, but I won't say it.
Miss Lemon is the devil.
Six.
File me, Miss Lemon. File me. Get your shoes off the couch. I want to solve a case, Poirot. Let me.
He has the guys in at the house going through the flower beds. What are they going to find?
I don't think she hid it here, sir. Well, we gotta look everywhere, you know. He's just making the peons dig in the garden just to do it. You gotta turn over every stone, you know. You just never know where she might have hidden it.
And the government's guy's going, I thought I was promised a pup.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get a little dog.
Where's my little dog?
Carlisle, I'm the one who doctored the plans. Everybody should think I'm awesome. And
I'm glad he has a drafting table in the study.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Where he can doctor the math on the plans.
Well, and it's implied that he was in the room when the plans got stolen. Like, take your headphones off, dude.
Well, they didn't get stolen.
No.
Right?
No.
Mayfield came in, put them in his pocket.
Yes.
They were in his pocket the whole time.
Even when she was being strip-shirted, which makes him even more grody.
Because he's sitting on the stairs outside the room where she's being cavity searched.
In front of a screen with a giant light behind it.
While Helga frisks her, he's out there going, it's still in my pocket. It's like still in my pocket.
Helga in the yard. sexploitation 70s movie. It's so weird.
You've gone a completely different direction.
It's very weird. Well, why is that light there?
I'm just thinking about Jap cuddling up to Hastings, and you're like, Helga's frisking her behind the screen. I got a bad movie for you, if you're
okay.
ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is a risky one. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Okay, so John Carson, who plays Sir George, is in this movie.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I had a... It was a task to narrow it down to one movie.
Oh,
because
he's been in some bad movies?
John Carson was in 6 Hammer horror films.
Oh, excellent.
And the ones after... Oh, the guy who played Dracula and the other
Christopher
guy.
Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing were no longer making movies with Hammer.
Yep.
Like, the really bad ones he made after... The really bad ones he made after that.
Yeah.
He was in a lot of those. But this is not one of those, okay? 1970.
Okay.
I'll read you the synopsis.
Okay.
While driving one evening, a man has a car accident. Afterwards, he finds his life has been turned upside down. He learns that he now supports a merger that he once opposed and apparently is having an affair. People claim they have seen him in places he's never been. Does he have a doppelganger or is he going insane?
Oh, this sounds so familiar. I think I've seen this movie, but I can't remember it. 1970, not Christopher Lee, not Peter Cushing.
No, it's not a Hammer movie.
It's not a Hammer movie.
I'll give you a big hint.
Okay.
It stars Roger Moore, Bond himself.
No, I don't know. I don't know if I've seen it then.
It's called The Man Who Haunted Himself.
The Man Who Haunted Himself?
He gets in a car accident and when...
So he's dead.
Well, they've got a heart monitor on him and it shows 2 heartbeats.
Ah.
And then he comes out of surgery and everything and he has a doppelganger. There's an evil version of him.
Does he have a mustache?
Well, yeah, because he has a mustache.
Oh, okay.
So the evil version doesn't have like a goatee or anything. Okay. They look identical, but he's trying to ruin his life. The evil doppelganger is trying to ruin his life.
No.
The Man Who Haunted Himself.
The Man Who Haunted Himself. That's excellent.
It looks like a good movie, actually. Oh. There's a confrontation at the end where the good Roger Moore is wet. I don't know why. And the bad Roger Moore isn't.
Oh?
And laughs maniacally. It's crazy.
No?
There Never you go. It. I Never. Win. 1 point for me.
1 point for you. Okay.
You
so.
Know, when we do our AMA, Tea with Maniacs, we may have to tally up over the 200 episodes, how many points we have each.
Who's got time for that? He said, knowing he's lost.
I think I'm winning by a lot. By a lot.
April 28th at 4 p.m.
Eastern.
Tea with the Maniacs.
We're going to lay down some truth.
Yes.
And drink some Earl Grey.
Well, you will.
I will. You won't.
It's got mushrooms in it. Ugh.
No, it doesn't. Send us questions, anything you want to know. Us,
coconut.
The podcast, shows, whatever.
Yes, please send questions.
There will also
through
be a
all
chat.
All the social media things.
You can ask questions
send
in
them
real time.
Any way that you want to contact us, feel free to contact us.
I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have so much fun. It's been a while since we've done a live episode.
Yes. So absolutely. And we will also discuss in that episode what were the schedule for moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So
because as always, the end of the school year is crazy.
Yeah, we've got some crazy times coming up.
But we've also got some good episodes coming up.
Yes, we do. So season one was 2 more episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then season 2, which we're going to roll right into as 9.
Yep.
Which will probably take us well into the fall. Because one thing we'll talk about is that summer is our slow period and we're going to slow down.
Yeah.
We always say that, but we never do.
We never do.
But we will. But we will.
But that's all right.
Yep.
But on the 28th, be there, be square. We're going to have fun.
Yep. Tea with the Maniacs. Bye, Maniacs.
Bye, Maniacs.
Thanks for joining us on the Mystery Maniacs podcast. If you enjoyed our crazy podcast today, don't miss out on future episodes. Follow us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and exclusive sneak peeks. Subscribe, like, and share to spread the word. Bye, Maniacs. At 4 p.m.
Start over.
Yeah.